The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The advice and opinions expressed by the host of Autism Live and her guests are meant solely as suggestion and should not be in any way construed as child-specific advice. The Center for Autism and Related Disorders advises working with a board-certified behavior analyst who has experience with autism before starting any intensive behavioral intervention. Any choices you make in determining your child's treatment are completely at your own discretion.
Welcome to Autism Live. I'm Shannon Penrod, and I am underslept, like a lot of people in Southern California. We were up late last night anyway, but then at 4:30 this morning, we had an earthquake, and we've had a couple of aftershocks. So I'm just going to put it out there that it's entirely possible that during this live show, we will have an aftershock. If we do, we will demonstrate and model good behavior. We will, Traven and I will let the cameras roll. But I will get underneath my desk because that's what you do. It is a reminder to me that there are usually times during the year where we do emergency drills here on the show, and we encourage you at home to do emergency drills. It's just a reminder that it's time to do that kind of a thing with your kiddos. And you know, you do want to do that with all of our kiddos, and you want to do it at different times of the day and different times of the night. So that in an emergency, a lot of times our brain like is doing all these other things, but our body has a memory of what it was we rehearsed, right? It's just like rehearsing a play. It's why we do fire drills at school. Everybody hates them. It's why they do the thing on the plane where they, you know, give you the, and we all make fun of it, right? But then if you need it in an emergency, your body already has a muscle memory of, oh yeah, this, right? Whatever. So I just want to put it out there to you guys that over the next couple of days, over the weekend, maybe do a fire drill with your kiddos. And, you know, maybe today have a discussion with them about sometime in the next couple of days, we're going to do a fire drill and or an earthquake drill or a whatever drill, whatever is pertinent. And you need to do all of them eventually, right? And rehearse what it is that you'll do. But the main thing is to do it at different times of the day so that they're in different rooms. Because if every time you do it, your child is in your living room, then they learn what to do if they're in the living room, right? And sometimes they're in their bedroom. And sometimes they're upstairs and sometimes they're downstairs. Sometimes they're in the bathroom, right? So pick random times to do the different things that, when you're doing the rehearsal, make it fun and not anxiety provoking, right? So that your kiddos know what to do and where to go and how to do that. All right, but if something happens, if we begin to shake, my table is shaky, so it looks like we're constantly having an earthquake, but if it starts to shake, I will get under the table. Self-preservation. I also wanna say that I have a neighbor who's been doing construction for, I don't know, since before the 4th of July, so the whole month of July, and we had an agreement that he would not do construction from 10 to 11 while I was doing live shows. He apparently has not looked at his watch, so if you hear all kinds of things. The house is not being torn down. It's just that my next door neighbor is, I don't know what he's building, but he's building something. So there we have it. That's all the news that's fit. Okay, so good morning and welcome to Israel and to Nita. Hello, 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 hello. We got a big show for you today. And if you couldn't tell, I'm excited about our guest today because she was one of the founding members of when we started Autism Live 9 years ago. We literally are like, I believe this is like, yeah, this week is our 9 year anniversary of doing a show about autism in this format. It's just, I can't even believe. Next year, we got to do something big when we hit the 10 year mark. So Dr. Evelyn Gould is going to be joining us in a little while. And she's amazing. She was a regular for, I think over a year on the show. And then she left to go become Dr. Evelyn Gould. And now she's going to be here with us for the first time in a long time, sharing her expertise, especially in the field of ACT, acceptance commitment therapy. It's the really hot cutting edge thing that folks are talking about and doing with parents, caregivers of individuals who are on the autism spectrum, and now with individuals who are on the autism spectrum, to manage our anxiety and stress so that we can lead better, more productive lives and help the individuals that we care about and have them help themselves to be able to do more. That's really what it's all about. I myself am I'm a recipient of being able to do this therapy. And look, it helped me so much, but I almost want to say more importantly, it helped my child. It helped me to parent my child in a way that wasn't suffocating some of the time. Let's not say that I'm not suffocating all the time. I have been accused of being Beverly Goldberg on more than one occasion, and I do not take offense at that. And if you don't know who Beverly Goldberg is, watch at least one episode of The Goldbergs and you will see. And my son howls when he watches the show and he's like, oh yeah, mom, that's not like you at all. It's terrifying and hilarious at the same time. Okay. We got a lot to do though before Dr. Gould gets here. So let me just say this. This show is meant to be interactive. We're going to be here for the next hour. Israel and Nita have already written in. I want to encourage you to participate in whatever way is comfortable for you. We got a lot of different ways. You can be writing in on the live feature at www.autism-live.com. You can write in on Facebook. Look for us on Facebook, Autism Live. You can go to YouTube and we're Autism Live on YouTube. We're live right there right now. We're on Twitter at Autism Live Show. Same thing for Periscope. Now, later on, the show will podcast to a lot of different places. It's a free download on iTunes. It is available to you on Spotify, Deezer, and iHeartRadio. And we've got a few more ways that are coming in the coming months. If there is a way that you like to watch podcasts or you're aware of a streaming service that we're not on, please, and you like to watch, you get your information in that way, please write to me and let me know. We're happy to be. For us, we really want to be places where people can access it at no additional cost to them. So there you go. But we're, you know, we're willing to be on a streaming service that you already have that does have a cost, as long as they don't charge you extra for Autism Live. That's our litmus test. Okay, so having said all of those things, I do want to remind you that while we have lots of wonderful experts on the show and a great one today, I'm not an expert in the field of autism. Please don't confuse me or mistake me for being an expert in the field of autism. I have been hosting shows about autism now in this, you know, interview format for 13 years because I did a radio show before this and I've learned a lot. So I consider myself having a definitely informed opinion, but not an expert in autism, not even an expert in my kiddo. But that is how I came into this community, was that my son was diagnosed with autism at the age of 2.5. He's now 17 and he's so spectacular. Hey, we're saying hi to, is it Mahmoud from Egypt? And if you're watching us right now, you're with us. We only invite our guests to be on Zoom with us. And if you want to be a guest on Autism Live, all you have to do is write to me and pitch me an idea. Say, I want to come on and talk about X, Y, or Z. Give me 3 to 5 talking points and let's figure it out. My email is s.penrod@autism-live.com. So we are utilizing Zoom to broadcast, as Ready, Set, Autism Family has said, but you can't jump into the Zoom. You can watch us as we stream the Zoom. That's what we're doing. As Chuck Saffler said to me recently, he's like, you're bending Zoom to your will. And that's exactly what we're doing. We're bending Zoom to our will, making it possible for us to bring you a show with very low tech. So thrilled that you're here. Hi, Jacinda. And again, hi to Ready, Set, Autism family. Hi, Kristen. Hi, Christina. So thrilled to have you all here. So we like to start Thursday with something we fondly refer to as the jargon of the day. This is when we take one word, one phrase, one acronym. We try to figure out what in the hey, nanny, nanny are the experts talking about? Why do I need to know this term? Why are you bothering me with this? Why don't you just put this in plain, simple terms that everybody can understand? Why do you have to use these words, right? But we've learned that over the years, if you make friends with these terms, it just like makes it easier. It's like shorthand. And when you start to use and understand these terms, I think people, they see that you are trying to learn the thing. And it's sort of, I hate this, but it's like being in the club. And when you go in like to an IEP meeting and you don't know the terms and you're constantly have to stop them and saying, what do you mean by this? Or worse, you just go nod your head and you don't even know what you're agreeing to, right? That's a horrible place to be in. The alternative is that you come in and you know at least some of the jargon terms and you know, you say, well, what was the antecedent? And they go, okay, this person, they're, you know, I can't pull the wool over their eyes, right? And suddenly you're in the club and starting to understand what people are saying. My whole thing as a parent was I wanted my child to make the most progress, and that meant saving time. And when you know what the jargon is, it saves you time. And I think it gives you some clouts. So clout, there's only one clout, not plural. Okay, so today's jargon term, we mentioned this on Monday when we did the ABCs of behavior, the three-term contingency. We brought up antecedent. And I want to say, when I pitched this idea, when we were starting the show, and I said, I want to do jargon of the day. And they were like, what do you mean? And this was the jargon term I picked to demonstrate. Because the first time somebody said antecedent to me, I was like, what are you talking about? And they were like, well, you know, there's always an antecedent. And I was like, I've never seen an antecedent in my life. Have no idea what you're talking about, right? But this is where it all began for me. So here we go. It's like old home week. We're here with antecedent and we have Dr. Evelyn Gould. So what is an antecedent? I don't know. I was picturing like some, like an anteater. I don't know why. I get these crazy ideas in my head of what something is. I try to picture it. Antecedent. It's like a four-legged animal with a long snout. No, that's not what an antecedent is. Let's take a look at what our actual definition of an antecedent is. Let's see if we can make fun of it. Anything that occurs or is present immediately before the behavior of interest. All right, there's not a lot to be made fun of here, but I still don't get it, right? If I'm early in the autism journey, I'm like, what? Anything that occurs or present immediately before the behavior of interest. What's the behavior of interest? I don't get it, right? So let's pare it down to our working definition so we really can get a handle on this and talk about why you need to know this. Antecedent, it's like asking the question, what happened before? So, okay, here we go. The school sends home a note and says that your kid got into trouble at school and that he kicked another kid, right? And you're like, well, okay. First question you want to ask is, well, what happened right before? What happened right before he kicked the kid? He didn't kick the kid in a vacuum, right? Something happened and then he kicked the kid. And you really can't deal with why he kicked the kid until you know what happened right before. Did the kid kick him and it was a response to the kick? Did the kid spit on him and that was the response to the kick? Did somebody dare him to kick the kid? Like, I don't know, but how we go about dealing with and preventing it from happening again starts with knowing what happened before. And you know that when we talked about the three-term contingency on Monday, we talked about the ABCs of behavior. A is antecedent, B is behavior, C is consequence. So something happens, the antecedent, then the behavior occurs, and then there's a consequence. And this is true, good or bad, in all things that we do. every day you get up and you go over and you turn on a light switch. There's a three-term contingency there. What happened before? Either you were coming into the room or the light was light out and then it was getting dark and you couldn't see, or somebody said, I want to show you this, but you couldn't see it, right? There was an antecedent, something happened, and your behavior was that you went and you flicked on the light switch. And the consequence was that light flooded in the room and you could see. How many times a day do you turn on a light switch? You are engaging in a three-term contingency. And when you or your child smoke a cigarette, there is a three-term contingency. Something happens, you smoke the cigarette, and there's a consequence. When a child on the autism spectrum bites someone, there is an antecedent. There is the behavior, the biting, and there is a consequence. And as I said to you on Monday, we are so focused on the behavior, right? Because the behavior is what gets us all fatutzed. We don't really have a lot of control over behavior, you know, because what are you going to do? Tape somebody to the floor and go, don't do that, right? We can say to them, don't do that. We can urge them not to do it, but you know, it's really dicey. But where we do have control is over the antecedent and over sometimes over consequences. And sometimes, you know, one is stronger than the other. Like you look at the behavior and you look at why the behavior is happening and you can't, unless you know what the antecedent and the consequence were, right? But you look at the behavior and you go, okay, what could we do with this so that this doesn't have to happen? Like the child who has the meltdown, and we look at it and we go, why is that meltdown happening? And it's because the child, you know, was so busy playing when it was lunchtime that they didn't eat. And now it's 2 o'clock and what, you know, we discover that, oh, you know, just like us, if they wait too long to eat, they're going to get crabby. So the antecedent modification that we would put in is making sure that they eat their regular meals and that we reward them from leaving a preferred task, like playing with their Legos. That's so much fun, and say, we're going to eat and then we're going to come back to playing with the Legos, right? So that we don't get to the point where the child is having a meltdown because their blood sugar is low. So a lot of times we can take care of the antecedent modification. I talked on Monday about how I used to bring a little bag of little fidget toys for my son that if we were anywhere, it was in the car. So if we then went to a restaurant, the fidget toys would come out and be on the table. So he was occupied. He didn't have an opportunity to get bored, because when my child got bored, he found something to do. And it might be taking apart the restaurant table, you know, so we weren't waiting for that. If we were in the doctor's office, the baggie of toys came out. If we were, you know, at somebody's house and their child wasn't sharing their toy, the bag of fidget toys came out and he had toys to play with. That's an antecedent modification. I didn't let him get bored so that then we would get behavior that then had to have a consequence, right? Okay, so antecedent is the beginning of everything. What happened before? Moving on, because we're already running late. We always have a question for you, the question of the day. We love it when you write in your answer to the question on Facebook or YouTube. And you can also email it to me. But how do you set yourself up for success? Because that's part of what I think of antecedent modification, setting our kids up for success. How do you set yourself up for success? I will tell you, one of my favorite things to fail to do that I know sets me up for success is getting a good night's sleep. And I shared with you that did not happen last night. And even before the earthquake, we were at the vets until, we didn't get home until 1 o'clock in the morning. So yeah, I'm not set up for success for today. And you know what? It's probably gonna be okay for today, but if I do that over and over and over again, you will see me, you know? And later on today, you know, hopefully we're going to get, I'm so excited about the show, we're going to get through the show, but you know, later on today, I'm going to be suffering. And my performance as a parent and as a person on this planet will be less because I didn't set myself up for success last night. Sometimes you can't, right? And sometimes you have to mediate and go, okay, I wasn't able to get the sleep that I wanted. So I made sure that I, you know, took it slow this morning, was kind to myself, ate a good breakfast, right, to sort of mediate it. But how do you set yourself up for success? Write in and tell us, because sometimes it doesn't occur to us, you know, what we could do differently. And then we see somebody else go, oh, well, you know what I do? I just do this. And you go, oh, For corn's sake, Ethel, I didn't think of that. One of my favorite expressions from I Love Lucy. Okay, so we always have a topic this week, and rounding out our topic for this week, making it fun. Oh my goodness. We talk a lot about doing ABA therapy and how important it is and how important to do so many hours of it. But if you are not focused on this aspect of everything, making everything in your child's environment as fun as possible, they're not going to want to do the hard things. And learning how to talk when it's not coming naturally to you, I'm told that it's one of the hardest things that there is. Learning how to overcome sensory stuff. Boy, I live in that neighborhood. I have sensory issues. And I got to be motivated, and it's got to be fun. You know, right now we're working hard to get me out of the house occasionally to go do things, because I do run a little agoraphobic, you know what I mean? And I've been home really, I don't want to be safe. I'm not crazy and going out and doing things that don't need to be done, but we're trying to get me out of the house a little bit so that when this is all over, I don't become a hermit, because I'm willing to. But it's got to be fun. Like, it can't all be drudgery. Last night we had to go to the vet, and that was not fun. And my husband was already, he was like, all right, we got to find something fun to do next time to get you out of the house. And it's the same way for our kiddos. We've got, and it for all of us, if you are doing an ABA intervention and it's all work and there is no fun, you're not going to be able to sustain it. It's going to be, you're going to get bitter and resentful, and you need to enjoy today. With everything that you have going on, you need to enjoy today. And our brains are these positive assumptive computers. So you just need to ask the question of yourself right now, how can I make today fun? Just ask it, wait for the answer that pops up. Something will pop up. And if it's a negative that goes, well, you can't, shove that to the side. And we're gonna bring Evelyn Gould in here, and she's gonna tell you about how to shove something to the side. But you need to find the way to enjoy something today, even if it's for 2 minutes. And if it can be something that isn't bad for you, so much the better, right? Because I think too often, you know, I'm guilty of finding something that I shouldn't eat and having that be my fun for the day. That's not really fun for the day. Yeah. So find something that enriches your life that's fun for the day. Because what are we doing if we're not doing that? And I used to have a thing that sat on my computer that said, Jem will never be this age again. And at 17, you know, I look back at how much I worried through all of the years. And, you know, I wish there had been somebody in this format to say to me, it's going to be okay. Find some time to have fun today. It's going to be okay. And having the fun might be the most important thing you do today. All right. I say that with love, because I need people to say that to me. Okay. I hope that Evelyn is with us. I'm saying hello to Amanda. And I'm saying hello to Dr. Surabhi Srinivasa. Such a beautiful name. Sorry for slaughtering it. But saying hello back to you. So thrilled that you are here. I see that we do have Evelyn with us, Dr. Evelyn Gould, excuse me. And I go ahead, Evelyn, if you can hear me. There she is.
Hi.
Oh my gosh. It's just such a joy to have you here with us.
Lovely to be invited, Shannon. It's been a while.
It has been a while. I've been saying all week long that you were a part of this from the very beginning. That, you know, 9 years ago today, I pretty much can know exactly where we were, because we were gearing up to do the first ever show about autism that we were doing. And you were front and center and one of a core group of 3 BCBAs that helped to shape like our jargon of the day and all of that. I'm going to get emotional. So it's so thrilling to have you back at the scene of the crime. Did you have any idea that we would still be doing, I didn't think we'd be doing this 9 years later.
I could not have predicted at all what any of us would be doing or where we'd be now. It's crazy to me. I mean, but in a way I'm not surprised. Like, you know, thinking about you, Shannon, and your passion and your skills and the impact that you have, through this program and in general, I'm kind of not surprised.
Well, I thank you. That's so sweet of you. But I have to say that I was so up a tree in those early days. And if it hadn't been, I mean, largely you, and there were a couple of other people who really helped me and educated me. Somebody said to me last night, you know, how did you learn what you know? And I learned a lot through my son having therapy, but in that first 6 months before we went on the air, in the first 6 months that we were on the air, I learned so much from you and a couple of other people that I threatened for years to write a book about what you guys gave me in that time period. So if I haven't said so before, thank you so much. And this show would not have existed without you. And your imprint is still felt on it. So thank you so, so, so very much. But you've been off and doing amazing things. And the last time that you were on the show, you were not yet Dr. Evelyn Gould, and you are Dr. Evelyn Gould now, and we couldn't be prouder of you about that. And you are a recognized expert in the field of autism, and in particular, the field of acceptance commitment therapy or treatment. Which one is it? Is it therapy or treatment?
Most often you'll see acceptance and commitment therapy, but I also see people calling it acceptance and commitment training, acceptance and commitment coaching. So there are different ways of, different people use different names for different purposes. As we know, words function in different ways in different contexts. So I think either is fine. And most often you'll hear people just say an ACT.
Yeah. That gets a little confusing for us because, as you know, there's a charity ACT that's Autism Today. Yeah. So that's the only reason why I try to specify. But talk to us a little bit about ACT and maybe even give us a little bit of information about how you got so excited about this particular way of looking at things.
Sure. So acceptance and commitment therapy is really an approach to how to show up and do things that matter to you, even when life is really hard. So when you essentially like finding direction in adversity, that's kind of how I would think about it. It's like, how do you connect to your values and the things that are most important for your child, for you, for your family, the kind of person you want to be, the kind of parent you want to be? How do you stay on track with that when life is throwing all kinds of hard stuff at you? And also, you know, even when life is not necessarily throwing hard things at you directly, we all have minds, right? We all have self-critics. We tend to be really hard on ourselves as humans. I think particularly parents, when I work with parents, they have very overactive self-critics and really a lot of difficult emotions and difficult thoughts show up in the process of doing things that matter to you, right? Because you wouldn't have hard feelings and thoughts if you didn't care, right? Because when you're indifferent, you don't, you know, you're like, whatever. But so when you're parenting a kid on the spectrum, that is like the most important thing, right? Figuring out how to care for your kid, how to get the treatment you need, how to show up for your family, how to juggle a million different roles and a million different pressures, buffer yourself against all the messages that are getting thrown at you as to how to be a good parent, how to do the right thing, like all of that stuff. A lot of hard stuff shows up. So ACT is really about how do you stay connected? Again, I'm repeating myself, but how to stay connected to what matters and find a direction, like stay going your true north, even when you're being distracted or pulled in a million different ways, and really struggling through adversity, I think.
It makes so much sense. And I was thinking about this morning and thinking about, you know, even just last night, there were a bunch of different things that I needed to do. I just said, you know, how do we set ourselves up for success? And I know that the best way to set myself up for success is to get a good night's sleep. But last night at 10:30, I had, you know, the vet call and say that they had an opening at 10:30 at night at urgent care, that I could take the new puppy that we have inherited from, because my friend passed away. So, and I really, you know, there's no appointments with vets. So at 10:30 last night, we were out taking the dog to the vet. You know, and it's like this war sometimes that you have this value that, you know, I really want to take care of myself, but I want to be a good dog owner. I want to be a good friend and I want to be a good parent. And all of it seems too much. And that it's this toss up in the moment about like, what do you choose? How do you do? And, you know, that was like one night, of my life, but I remember, and you know, cause you were around me then that, you know, especially when Jem was earlier and we were in the more intensive intervention and we didn't know what outcome we were going to have, that those kinds of decisions were so hard on a daily basis. And it ate at me. And, you know, I have come to realize that, and I was just saying this the other day, that you want your child to be independent, but you want your child to be safe. And those two things are almost always in direct opposition. And that alone, just those two things for a parent with a kiddo on the autism spectrum can be a daily struggle. So how is it that ACT helps us to sort that out?
So ACT essentially teaches you some strategies that can be kind of grouped into two realms. So we have acceptance and mindfulness-based strategies, and then we have commitment and behavior change strategies. And essentially the acceptance and mindfulness piece is, I would call it the and piece, right? So rather than saying to yourself, I want my kid to be independent, but I also want them to be safe. It's like, how do I move towards, I want them to be independent and I want them to be safe. Both of those things, can we make room for both of those things being present at the same time and figure out how to choose in a direction that kind of moves us the way that we want. So acceptance isn't about things being fine. It's not about liking it. It's not about saying, okay, I want this struggle. It's about making room and space, giving yourself space, giving your self-compassion, I think, and being willing to make room for the hard stuff in the service of what you care about. And the mindfulness piece is about being present, right? Because when the hard stuff shows up, like this decision about the dog or something that you're struggling with your kid, it's not just about this moment, right? It's never just about this moment. It's about every other moment that happened before that, every other piece of your history and everything you've gone through. Everything shows up in that moment. And it can be really hard to know what you're responding to know what way to be, to go, what am I being pulled by? And I think the mindfulness piece of ACT allows you to pause and breathe and get present in the current moment of what am I struggling with right now. I'm recognizing all of this other stuff is showing up. I'm recognizing that I'm having all these thoughts, I'm having a lot of feelings, I'm being pulled in different directions. How do I take a step back from that and pause, give myself the space to choose, the direction I want to go in, the kind of parent I want to be in this moment, not in the future, not everything about the past, but what is the most important thing in this moment? And the next moment you get to choose too, right? So you can always, every moment is another choice of what direction you want to go in. You can always turn back in this direction, you can go that direction. So I think the acceptance and mindfulness pieces allow you to kind of pause and notice what's showing up. And then the behavior change pieces of ACT, the commitment values piece, allows you to choose. So it's kind of a process of pausing, noticing, choosing in the present moment, and then recognizing that that is an ongoing process, right? So every moment you can reorient and connect to what matters to you. And, you know, we have to do, the parents that I work with, they have to do so many hard things all the time. And their BCBAs ask them to do really hard things all the time. Their treatment providers ask them to do really hard things all the time. And I think it's just so important when you know you have to do hard stuff that you know what your why is, right? It's not just, we just have to do this hard stuff for the sake of it, but that you can really connect with why you're doing this hard stuff, the longer term, bigger picture, wading through this swamp in the service of what? And I think ACT, the commitment change piece, the values piece, helps you find your why when things are really, really hard. So I think those are the key pieces I would sum it up in, that kind of pausing, noticing, and choosing process. And bring in the heart. Like, I guess you asked me earlier, and I didn't speak to this, Shannon, but why I came to ACT, but really like finding the heart and the kindness and the compassion in this struggle, because parents know so much, right? Parents, I realized very quickly as a clinician, actually, Shannon, you mentioned, you know, you learned a lot from me, but it's a two-way process. Behavioral intervention is a relational thing, right? It's about relationships. It's about relationships with kids, relationships between parents and therapists and treatment providers. It's a reciprocal relationship. And you guide us, like you guide us as practitioners. We learn so much from you. You teach us how to help you, but not if we're not listening. So ACT is so important for me as a clinician because it helps me pause and notice what I'm responding to. When a parent is struggling, can I show up? Because it's hard to watch people be distressed. It's hard for parents to watch their kids struggle. It's hard for us to watch you struggle. So it's a reciprocal intervention too. It helps me too. And I forgot where my train of thought's going there, but I feel like that's important to say, that this is a relational process, that I noticed that we have these great tools in ABA, we have these great behavioral, we have a whole literature on behavioral parent training and how awesome it is, but that's often not what parents need, right? Actually, parents are very capable. They actually do really know how to parent their kids. They know what to do. It just sometimes is really hard when the hard stuff shows up. So it's not a lack of like, I don't know how to parent. So me coming in with my toolbox and being like, you just need to do planned ignoring or whatever, is actually not helpful. When you can step back and give parents the space and the tools they need to show up for themselves, to know how to manage difficult thoughts and emotions, to know how to navigate that with their kid and manage, you know, be able to be present when their kid's struggling, they actually know what to do a lot of the time with our support. So for me, ACT was bringing the heart and the why, like, why should this parent do this hard thing? How do I understand what they really care about and what their kid cares about and what really matters to them as a family? And everything I do should be oriented towards that, right? How do I know that? I know that through ACT. I bring compassion and self-compassion, motivation, all of that stuff, because the rest of the stuff doesn't matter if that isn't present. I think the skills training doesn't matter if the heart isn't there, the motivation isn't there. And then for me, like I said, for me to nurture that relationship and be able to learn and be present and listen really well to what parents are telling me, what they're observing, and for me to show up as a clinician with my heart and be able to keep doing that even when things are hard. So I hope that kind of gets at the gist of it.
Very inspirational. Mm-hmm. I feel like I want to also say, though, that ACT wasn't specifically designed to be used with the autism community, and it isn't true. Just with the autism mm-hmm. community. And it's really in its really infancy that it being used with the autism community. And there is a growing number of BCBAs and ABA professionals who mm-hmm. are interested in this, I think for the same mm-hmm. reasons that you have said, that, you know, if you're a well-trained BCBA, you have that set of tools and you have science and you right. know what works behaviorally, but it isn't as easy as just, you know, programming mm-hmm. a computer and going, okay, mm-hmm. that's done. You have to deal with living, breathing people yeah. who are individual and have feelings about mm-hmm. what you're asking them to mm-hmm. do. And for every parent who has ever had a professional, whether it's a therapist or a BCBA, say to you, well, you just need to do this. And you're like, mm-hmm. yeah, try that at 2 o'clock mm-hmm. in the morning when I haven't exactly. had sleep. My other kid has diarrhea. Come on. Yeah.
Because it's never about this moment, Shannon. So if you come in with that narrow view of like ABCs, right, it's just about the kid wants this. You said no, now he's having a tantrum. So you just need to not, you know, give him the thing. But that's ignoring the complexity and the depth of human experience, right? Because there is so much more history there. There is so much more going on, the richness of that. So I agree with you. I think yes, and yes, we have this toolbox and this science and it works. It absolutely works. I'm a full preacher about that. And we also need to appreciate, in order for this to work, we have to appreciate the realities of the parents' experience and what everyone's going through. And ACT, I think, allows us to do that a little bit more and support parents to do really hard stuff with all of that that's going on.
So having said all of that, you know, people have all this love for you that they've been writing in and saying how lovely it is to see you back. But where, for the typical parent who's watching this, where would they find ACT in their community, in their, where are the places that they should look to bring this more present into their lives?
Well, it depends kind of what you're looking for, but there is an organization called the Association for Contextual Behavioral Science.
And that's a mouthful. You're going to have to say that again for us.
So it's ACBS, Association for Contextual Behavioral Science. And they are an organization, a professional organization that supports the science and practice of ACT-based. It's ACT-based. It's not just ACT, actually. They support behavior analysis in general. There are other therapies that have grown out of this behavioral approach that they support, and they're both a scientific kind of organization and a practice organization. So if you want to get the kind of nitty-gritty of it, I would go there. They do have resources for the general public on there too. Clinical resources, book recommendations, courses, things like that, and providers. So you can also find providers who are interested in ACT in their directory. And I mean, also I would suggest there are, for parents anyway, there are plenty of providers doing some trainings for parents. There is a wonderful woman in England, Gemma Gilmore, who has a blog called Parenting with Science, and she's done some nice videos on social media, ACT oriented there. Lisa Coyne and I also did a free webinar for parents on burnout, actually parental burnout, not specific to parents of kids on the spectrum, but all parents basically who maybe have kids who are struggling. And that is available through YouTube, and I can send the link to you, Shannon.
Okay.
For that. There's some lovely books. There is a book by Russ Harris called The Reality Slap, which is about dealing with life when it slaps you in the face. It's not specific to parents of autism, but he actually does talk about his experience of using ACT to help him when his son was diagnosed on the spectrum and what that was like for him. And I like it because it's very brief. And who has time? Nobody has time to read anything. But if you do, that's a nice book that can introduce you to ACT in a layperson way. There are some lovely blogs by Lisa Coyne, for example, for parents on an ACT approach that are easier to read than a book.
And we should say that Lisa Coyne, her name is spelled a little bit differently than what they might
think. Yes, that's a good point. So it's Lisa and Coyne, C-O-Y-N-E. And she has actually a number of different blogs for parents out there. I would be happy to share some links with you, Shannon, as well. Autism Live is a good place because there's several episodes, I believe, in your archive where we talk about acceptance and commitment therapy.
There are.
Yeah. And there are some apps now. There are some great phone apps that are based around acceptance and commitment therapy. That give you little, which are easier too than reading a book. They just are little, you can spend 1 minute learning a skill or practicing mindfulness or something.
Are there any apps in particular you would recommend?
Yes, there are. I'm just going to look at my phone. There was one that was released actually by the Veterans Association, I think, for COVID support. And I think it's called COVID Coach. And it is ACT-based. Not specific for parenting, but it's a really nice, well-researched app. There is one called ACT Companion. I think that one costs money. The COVID Coach is free, I believe. ACT Companion is not free, but it was developed by Russ Harris and a few other people. It's great. It's really good.
Is there awesome autism-specific stuff on that one? Or just...
You know what? There isn't. So this is the piece that's missing, Shannon. So we should do something about that with all the time we have. But there is there's no specific books on for parents of kids on the spectrum. I really think we should do something about that sometime.
I'm in complete agreement.
Because the one thing I would say about ACT and why I particularly was drawn to it as well is because it's really helpful for situations that you cannot deal with via normal problem solving strategies, right? Like the chronic kind of challenges that you're being faced with when you have a kid on the spectrum. You can't problem solve everything in that situation, especially not in the short term.
Can we do an example so that
what do you mean an example?
So an example of a type of situation that is chronic that you can't solve through other means for a parent that's on the spectrum.
Well, I guess what I was actually thinking of was just that there's always another thing. Like, it's that kind of situation, I think, that it's not like a quick fix here, right? Especially when your kid is diagnosed, there are ongoing challenges. And every time you kind of get over one hurdle, there's like another hurdle, and there's another hurdle, and there's another hurdle. But some of the more chronic things that continue are like struggling with school issues, right? Yeah. That is just never ending, usually. Finding a treatment provider that is good, provides good quality support and is right for your family, and how to fund that, insurance and costs and financial worries, care for your kid, like that is typically an ongoing challenge.
And families. So doing other kinds of therapy, there's no magic wand that just fixes all of that. You got to keep walking through it.
And then for things like thoughts and feelings, Shannon, cannot be problem solved away. They come back. We can distract ourselves for a little while sometimes. We can avoid. We can do all kinds of things to not face our feelings or to avoid thoughts, to try and think positively and all of that. They're very short-term fixes. And sometimes we run into more problems because if our default is to avoid emotions and avoid thoughts and just try not to have them, they actually can come back worse. And the avoidance can lead to, you know, it's fine to have one glass of wine at the end of the day. It's not great when you find yourself drinking bottles of wine every single day, all day. So I guess I'm also speaking to problems like, what do you do when you have difficult emotions and thoughts? Because that is something you can't just problem solve away and be like, I'm just going to not have them, right?
That's
a dead person's goal, right?
Right.
To not have emotions is a dead person's goal. And the suck it up doesn't work either.
Often we're told to just suck it up. We got a child on the autism spectrum, just suck it up. I don't know
how helpful.
To suck it up.
Not,
I know
not helpful.
How to eat it up, but I don't know how to suck it up.
Right. And I'm not helpful. And all the things you probably often people do to try and suck it up actually create more problems. I think ACT creates a space where, with the acceptance piece of like, this is happening, this is what is happening, this is how I feel, this is the thought that I'm having, and I can learn how to make space for that, to be kind to myself, to treat those thoughts and emotions with gentleness and kindness. And now I'm going to spend my energy figuring out how to move forward and do the things that matter to me, instead of wasting energy on struggling with trying to suck it up, because that is an energy suck that you don't have time for. It's not a good use of energy to be trying to struggle with your thoughts and emotions and make them go away and be fine. So I don't know if that's helpful at all.
It is very helpful. We're starting to run out of time here, and I don't want to forget to put some things in here. Mm-hmm. That there is evidence to show that not only does this help a parent, but that in turn, when the parent gets that help, that there is an effect mm-hmm. upon the child. Talk 100%. A little bit about that. It makes great sense to me.
Yes. So, I mean, the first thought I had, well, yes, there is research to back this up, to show that when parents are supported in an ACT-based way, that they are able to parent in a more flexible, adaptive way for their kids. They model the skills themselves for their kids. You get so flexible parents, and parents are able to respond flexibly with respect to their emotions and thoughts instead of struggling against them. They actually parent more flexibly, and they're more sensitive to the needs of the kid in the moment. We see decreases in aggressive behaviors. We see decreases in anxious behaviors. There are a lot of really good outcomes for that. And also parents are better able to do things that matter to them in terms of self-care, for example. They're able to take action in a more productive way, in a way that supports their well-being and their family's well-being. And it is like an oxygen mask, Shannon. Like when you put your oxygen mask on first, you're way better equipped to help your child and help others in your family, for sure.
And you actually have a protocol that's how many weeks?
It's actually six to eight weeks, depending on who's doing it and how you want to do it. But the one that I worked on with Lisa Coyne was actually 6 weeks.
Uh-huh. And are you still doing the protocol, or is it just other people doing your protocol now?
I have been disseminating it to many, basically anyone who wants it. Actually, I've just been giving it away to many practitioners who are now using it and adapting it. I'm not doing it verbatim anymore. What I actually am doing now is running parent groups, which are actually 4 sessions. Because parents, it's hard to find the time to show up consistently to a group. And I also do act very much individually, but it's more individualized than the parent manual.
Yeah.
But many people are now using that protocol, actually. And Lisa Coyne, it was adapted from one that Lisa Coyne and Phoebe Murr had created, actually, for anxious parents of anxious children. And then I took it and adapted it specifically for parents who have kids with autism. So they are running that as well with anxious kids, too.
So we have both providers and parents on, you know, the different streaming services that we're on right now. If they, and people will watch this later on, if somebody is watching and they're a provider and they're like, I want the protocol, I would like to be doing this either with individuals or with a group. And if a parent is like, I would like to have, you know, talk to my provider about reaching out to you to do this, how would they do that? How would they reach out? How would they get the protocol?
They are very welcome to email me directly, and I can share it with their provider. I can share it with you if you're a provider. I'm fine with sharing it with parents if they want to take it to their provider. That's fine. It is a provider manual. And I think if you go, it would be unusual, and maybe this is a good test actually of providers, but it would be very unusual for if you go to your provider and you say, I heard about acceptance and commitment therapy, and I really want to understand how that might be useful to me, and I'd like to integrate that in my, is that something you can help with, or is that something you're willing to do? I think if they react with we don't do that, that's, you know, not appropriate or whatever, that's probably not a good sign. Right. They may say, we don't have training and we're not sure how to do that. And then that would be a time to say, well, I heard there's this manual that you could follow, because a part of the reason for me doing that manual, Shannon, was to provide a starting point for people who are learning, clinicians and practitioners who are really interested in ACT, who are learning how to do it and how to do that kind of work, so that anyone could use it. Like, it's written, the scripts are there, it's very step-by-step. It's designed for people who are new. I think obviously the more skilled you get at it, the more you can do with it, but it's, specifically, there isn't an excuse, really, I guess is what I'm saying.
There we go. So where would they reach out to you at? What's your email?
You can reach out to me. I have so many emails. I'm like, which one is the best one? Probably they could reach out to my email at the eGould, the one you're using, eGould@harvard.edu. No, eGould at, let me put it in the chat, Shannon, because I'm going to mess it up.
And then I'll read it because they're not able to see the chat.
Okay.
We don't broadcast the chat.
There you go.
So eGould at McLean. So McLean, McLean.harvard.edu.
Yeah.
So eGould at McLean.harvard.edu. Edu, and I'm going to say it one more time with the alphabet the way they do. E as in egg, G as in gorilla, O as in Oscar, U as in umbrella, L as in lollipop, D as in dog, at, M as in Mary, C as in, I don't know what C is, C as in cat, L as in lollipop, mm-hmm. E as in elephant, A as in apple, N as in Nancy, dot Harvard, H-A-R-V-A-R-D, I think everybody knows that, dot E-D-U, E mm-hmm. as in elephant, D as in dog, U as in umbrella. Mm-hmm. And you can reach out to her there. And talk a little bit for just a minute here about what you have been doing at McLean, because anxiety is a big discussion among our parents, that we have a lot of parents and kids who experience anxiety. Can you talk for just a minute about what you do at McLean?
Sure. Well, I was working full-time at the Child and Adolescent OCD Institute as a clinician there. So that's a residential and partial hospitalization program for young people, children and adolescents who have severe treatment refractory OCD and plus, I'd say OCD plus. But they have a diagnosis of OCD in order to get into that program. However, about half the kids in that program are also on the spectrum, right? Because it complicates things. So a lot of the kids there have multiple things going on. And I'm now no longer working there full-time as a clinician, but I am in a consultant teaching training role there now as an associate there. And I still work privately. I work with Lisa Coyne in a private practice treating kids with OCD, but also spectrum, bunch of all kinds of mood disorders, all kinds of anxiety disorders and all kinds of difficulties. And we take very much a family approach. I do a lot of parent work. Sometimes I work only with the parents because the children don't want to come, right? A lot of the time the kids are afraid, kids are very stuck. They don't want to come to treatment. So maybe I just work with the parents. Sometimes I work with the kids and the parents together. Sometimes I just work with the kids. But yes, I've sort of moved to more specializing in kids who have high anxiety who are also on the spectrum. But of course I treat typically developing kids and young people. I work with young adults as well. So a really nice range and very interesting. I love it. I love working with parents. I love all of what I do. I still do a lot of training and consulting and things too. And it's really fun.
Well, you are a gift to this community and you have been a gift to me in my life. I've mentioned this before, but I had the opportunity to go through at least a version of the protocol with Dr. Gould, and it was life-changing for me. Mm-hmm. I was at a critical moment in which my child was wanting more independence and I was stuck. I was right there in that place of, I need for him to be safe. And the world is not a safe place. And he, mm-hmm. you know, even though he's doing so well, this was, you know, what, 7 years ago. And I needed to make the leash longer. And all I could see was that people were asking me to completely let go. And there was mm-hmm. no way that I could do that. And what Evelyn did was she gave me the roadmap. She showed me what was important to me. She helped me to uncover that so that I had a reason why I was willing to work on it. And then she gave me small measured things that she led me to. She didn't say, oh, you must do this. She was like, what do you want to, now knowing this, what do you want to do? And to the point where, you know, my son has a lot more freedom. I'm just going to tell you that in this, he's about to be a senior in high school now. And we're applying to colleges in the middle of a pandemic. Next year, when it's time for him to go to school, you're going to need to be on speed dial. I've dreamt his entire life of him being able mm-hmm. to wear the cap and gown and say, Mom, I'm off to change the world. That was my picture in my head for all of the ABA that we did. And now suddenly that we're just, you know, like 10 months away from that, I'm having trouble breathing, picturing him going off to college. So mm-hmm. we're going to need a brush up. I'm just going to tell you. I want that. I want that wholeheartedly, but it's scaring me beyond all possible belief.
It's hard, Shannon, because I think, you know, something that Lisa talks a lot about too is the developmental process of parenting, right? We talk about developmental process of children and how they grow up, but we don't talk a lot about that, the developmental shifts that have to happen in parenting, and it's very hard.
Amen to that. I tell them on a daily basis, you know, I go, listen, I've never parented a 17-year-old mm-hmm. before. Forgive me. This is my first mm-hmm. go-round. All right, we are totally out of time, and I know you've got another thing to go to, and so do I. We appreciate you so much for taking the time to be here with us, and we hope that people reach out to you to get the protocol, but thank you. Such a light in our community. We're deeply indebted to you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for inviting me, Shannon. Bye.
Bye-bye. And I really have to bounce. I got to tell you guys that we are going to be playing an oldie but a goodie, Let's Talk Autism with Shannon and Nancy. We're going to do that for the next couple of Fridays because I got to spend some time with this kid before he's a senior. We're live, you know, the rest of the days, but oldie but a goodie on tomorrow. And I don't even know which one. So, but we're back on Monday with Bonnie. I need a couple more questions. I have a few that are just about your specific situation with school in the fall, with what you're getting, you know, what your issue is, what you've said to school. Be very, very specific. Send it to me now if you want your question answered about distance learning or hybrid or whatever it is that you've got for the fall. Send those to me right now because I got to get those to Bonnie tomorrow. I love and adore you all. Thank you. I love some of the things in the chat and how appreciative you are of Autism Live. I will tell you, we wish there were more people watching too, but that really comes down to you. We don't have a marketing budget. Please share. Please like, please follow us, subscribe, all the things, right? But if you love, and several of you wrote in and said that you love this show so much and don't know why there are not more people watching, please share it. Please share it. That's what we need more than anything else. Adore you. I will be back with you live on Monday. And don't forget, we show the marathon on Saturday mornings on Facebook. If you've missed anything this week, you can always catch it on Saturday morning on Facebook. All right. Love and adore you. Give your kiddos a hug from me and one for you too. Bye-bye for now.